Prattville.
Here.
Ms. Nimmons. Mr. O'Rourke.
Here.
Dr. Webb.
Here.
Mr. Welch.
Here.
Mr. Wilbur.
Here.
Mr. Yost.
Yes, here.
Mr. Welch, please.
I move that the board convene an executive session to consider the employment of employees as permitted by Section 2C1 of the Open Meetings Act and collective negotiating matters as permitted by Section 2C2 of the Open Meetings Act and pending probable or imminent litigation as permitted by Section 2C11 of the Open Meetings Act.
Second.
Call, please.
Mr. Prattville.
Yes.
Dr. Webb.
Yes.
Mr. Welch.
Yes.
Mr. Wilbur.
Yes.
Mr. Yost.
Yes.
Mr. O'Rourke.
Yes.
Provost Lord, please.
Then we can stop. Go ahead. Don's out of order.
Oh, God. I knew it. We will call the January 22nd, 2010 meeting to order, please.
Closer.
Mr. Prattville.
Here.
Julie Nimmons. Mr. O'Rourke.
Here.
Dr.
Looking
Webb.
At my attorney a second.
Dr. Webb.
Here.
Mr. Welch.
Here.
Mr. Wilbur.
Here.
Mr. Yost.
Here.
Thank you. The first order of business is the approval of the minutes of the November 20, 2009 board meeting. Have a motion, please.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion?
Please. Mr. Prattville.
Yes.
Dr. Webb.
Yes.
Mr. Welch.
Yes.
Mr. Wilbur.
Yes.
Mr. Yost.
Yes.
Mr. O'Rourke.
Yes. The next item is purchase approvals. Vice President Weber, please.
Okay, thank you. We have three purchase approvals for the board today, and all three of these are from local funds. The first item that we're requesting the board to approve is Lincoln Hall and Stevenson Dining remodeling. This is a continuation of our project to make improvements in residence halls, and I'll add that this purchase item includes a new fire sprinkler system for Lincoln Hall. The recommended vendors are listed in your notes on page 2 and 3. And I'll note that we did go with the lowest bid in all cases, and we were actually quite pleased with where the bids stood. They were a bit under what we expected to see.
Chair will entertain a motion.
I'll move to approve.
Second.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Mr. Prattville.
Yes.
Dr. Webb.
Yes.
Mr. Welch.
Yes.
Mr. Wilbur.
Yes.
Mr. Yost.
Yes.
And Mr. O'Rourke.
Yes.
Thank you. The second purchase item is a fire sprinkler system for Thomas Hall and Taylor Hall. This again is a continuation of the sprinkler system installations we've been doing throughout the residence halls. And again, we've gone with the low bids in both parts of this project.
I move. Second, please.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Mr. Prattville.
Yes.
Dr. Webb.
Yes.
Mr. Welch.
Yes.
Mr. Wilbur.
Yes.
Mr. Yost.
Yes.
Mr. O'Rourke.
Yes.
Thank you. The third purchase item is for parking lot improvements in the University Court. If you're not familiar with the asphalt in University Court, it really is in bad shape, and this is a major renovation project we've been needing to undertake for some time now. And what's before the board today is the first phase of the two phases in which we wish to pursue this project. Again, we've gone with the low bid in this case, and like the other two projects, this one is also from local funds.
Chair will entertain a motion.
I'll move to approve.
Second.
Second.
Any discussion?
Yeah, I wanted to ask about the wide range of bids here on fire protection. The low one is $631,000. The high bid is $1,065,000. Somebody must have made a mistake there.
That's the previous item, but we did check with the various vendors who put bids in on that, and for whatever reason, the vendors did bid what they did. We confirmed the accuracy of those bids.
And he's bonded, I guess.
I see on here that there were 11 vendors, plan holders, who did not bid. Do you have any idea why they would not bid, or any of them?
This is for the parking lot improvements.
Yeah, what we're on now.
I'm sorry, I don't have any information as to why those vendors chose not to put in a bid.
I was just looking at the number, 11. That's quite a few.
Any other discussion? Roll call, please.
Mr. Cradaville.
Yes.
Dr. Webb.
Yes.
Mr. Welch.
Yes.
Mr. Wilbur.
Yes.
Mr. Yost.
Yes.
And Mr. O'Rourke.
Yes. Our next action item is housing rates. Vice President Nadler, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. In front of you, you have a double-sided sheet which specifically delineates all of the financial information involved in the housing and dining program. The specific rates start on page 9. I ask that you please turn to page 11 for a small correction. Down toward the bottom of page 11, it says summer 2011. It says effective May 2010. That should be effective May 2011. So those are the following summer rates. All of the other information is correct. The proposed housing rates for fiscal year 11, as I mentioned, are in your board packet. We are proposing a 6.25% increase in housing rates. This represents the smallest increase requested since the 2003-2004 academic year. This is based on two reasons. One, we've been working very hard on keeping housing affordable, and two, it certainly is being sensitive to the economic climate in which we live. We continue to offer some of the lowest rates in the state of Illinois of any public institution, and we believe that we are offering incredible value. The proposed rate increase represents a unanimous recommendation by the Housing Bond Revenue Committee, which includes three students from student government and three students from the Residence Hall Association. The proposed housing rates are driven by increases in such areas as utilities, food, student wages, and salaries, the salaries, the bulk of which are mandated by union negotiations and contract agreements. 3% of the overall increase is specifically dedicated to ongoing capital projects, as you just voted upon, some of which are designed for room improvements and beautification of the residence halls to make them better living and learning environments. Certainly, one of the things we've done has been very popular are the room renovations, and you've heard me speak previously about the new furniture that I think the students can rearrange in about 26 different ways. So it makes for a very exciting weekend sometimes, rearranging furniture. We also are obligated from a safety standpoint and also in some cases by state law for capital improvements for life safety. For example, you just heard about a proposal that includes the installation of fire safety sprinkler systems. We certainly are convinced that part of the reason our students really enjoy living on campus, of which we know at least 93% are highly satisfied, in part is because of the capital improvements that we've been able to do. It is important to note that no appropriated resources from the state of Illinois are used to operate or improve university housing or the residence halls in particular. I'm proud that we've been on a trend of decreasing the amount that we've asked housing rates to increase overall. That is a trend that will continue. We're committed to that. And again, I'd be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Chair will entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion.
Mr. Chairman, we discussed this matter extensively in the Finance Committee meeting. I was particularly concerned that if you look at these rates over the last 5 years, they are substantially higher than the inflation rate, almost twice that rate. So I guess the question was, why is that? And after considerable discussion, Dr. Nadler gave us a sheet, which you may have by your desk, that shows the computation in quite detailed form of how these rates are arrived at. And if you'll notice, each function on the left, description of the expense, current budget, projected budget, amount of increase, and then what percent that is of the total. So if you total the column on the right-hand side, it equals the amount that's being requested. So after viewing this, I'm convinced it's what we need. Part of the explanation, I guess, is that the cost of living index does not cover or covers many items other than what's called for here. And no doubt heat and gas rates and other things, I guess, exceed the cost of living.
Thank you. Any other discussion?
I just think it's appropriate to, point out that we're in the lower tier of our peer institutions throughout the state. And so, as Dr. Nadler so correctly pointed out, we're offering value. And I think this is a good deal, opportunity for the students at Eastern. And I think Dr. Nadler and his staff is to be commended for a good job. Appreciate it.
Any other discussion? Roll call, please.
Mr. Cradiville.
Yes.
Dr. Webb.
Yes.
Mr. Welch.
Yes.
Mr. Wilbur.
Yes.
Mr. Yost.
Yes.
Mr. O'Rourke.
Yes. Our next item is revision to boarding board governing policies. Provost Lord, please.
As the agenda notes, this is the second and presumably final reading of this particular adjustment to our board governing policies. It had been shared at the previous board meeting. The item is in addition to the academic freedom and responsibility section of the board governing policies. I believe you're all familiar with it, and I believe it was introduced initially by Trustee Welch, who may also wish to speak to it. And I also believe Dr. Allison has requested an opportunity to speak to this matter in a moment as well.
We'll entertain a motion first, and then we'll have discussion.
I would move that the item D, revisions to board governing policies, the amendments are approved by the board.
That's my second.
Mr. Welch, did you want to speak?
Yes, I'll speak to the amendments. The rationale is due to two public acts that were approved by the General Assembly and signed into law by the governor. These amendments were in response to interpretations of the State Employees Ethics Act, specifically prohibited political activities. These amendments would clarify, among other things, the ability of faculty and staff to pursue these items that are so mentioned and under the hopefully under the protection of this policy. This would help clarify what is prohibited, and this is the intent that any of the board members, certainly those that follow me, as well as administrators and et cetera, know the rights under this particular aspect of academic freedom. I consider certain aspects of the State Employees Ethics Act specifically prohibited political activities are, to some degree, a problem, and we have even examples here on interpretation of this. So this is the purpose of clarification of what is prohibited, and so it speaks directly to these amendments.
Dr. Allison?
Shall I speak from here or podium? Thank you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak about the proposed amendment to the academic freedom language. My name is John Allison. I'm the UPI EIU chapter president, and my executive committee of UPI has asked me to speak in favor of the proposed language. The reason that we favor the addition of this language is that overzealous applications of the Ethics Act have created a chilling effect on political speech. Faculty members and others are often over-concerned themselves that in some way they might violate the Act. My understanding is that at the University of Illinois, where for a time the campus community, the faculty, were prohibited from having certain bumper stickers on their vehicles, the university was trying to not run afoul of the Ethics Act. And so we would be very pleased to have you, the board, vote in favor of this proposed language. In part because it would be a helpful guide and reminder for future administrators, future board members. None of us is in place forever. Additionally, if certain members of the public or interest groups express ire about political statements and activities of our members, UPI members, then the university president, the provost, members of the Board of Trustees can point out that language that is proposed for addition. I believe it would provide a useful clarification. I am aware of a number of instances at, I mentioned the University of Illinois, community colleges, where overzealous applications of the Ethics Act have created some difficulties. With the inclusion of the proposed language that's before you now, I think we can greatly reduce the prospect that that would ever happen here at Eastern. Thank you very much again for the opportunity to speak with you. I'm certainly pleased that I made it just in time. There was a bit of a holdup for me. I will not annoy you with the the details of that, but glad to be here, and I hope you will support this language. Thank you.
Board discussion?
One question that I had, Mr. Welch, does this language here mirror what the statute says?
It essentially does. General Counsel Miller adapted this for the addition to the policy. I think there is one exception that bumper stickers can be displayed on his or her vehicle. The previous language specified motor vehicle. So if you have a bicycle, logo stick, skateboard, or whatever other mode of transportation that you choose to utilize, you can have the appropriate sticker on it. But otherwise,
Mr. Chairman,
same.
I guess I don't think it's a big issue whether this is adopted or not, simply for the reason that this changes absolutely nothing, because this matter is already state law. So I wonder what the reason is that the board would adopt it. Not that it's going to hurt anything, I suppose. The other thing this does, as I understand it, Leo, it amends our academic freedom statement. Is that not correct?
These are amendments, yes.
Yeah. The academic freedom statement goes back to the 1920s. It's been debated universities throughout the country over all those years. Every word in there has been parsed and reparsed. And it's a, I think practically all universities have it as a statement. So what we're proposing to do is amend that. And I guess I'm not sure what that means in terms of the statement on academic freedom. I don't know what the legal implications are of adding, what this essentially does is add the non-academic staff to the statement on academic freedom. Up until this point, the statement refers only to the academic staff in terms of the research and teaching. The non-academic staff do not do research or teaching. So I think it has implications for the statement on academic freedom. Now, if what we're wanting to do is simply convey that the Board of Trustees favors this law and what it means, I'd be more than happy to make a motion to that effect, because I think we all support it. But I'm a little questioned, I question a little bit why we really need to do this, and in terms of the statement on academic freedom, whether it's the right thing to do.
Well, I would like to respond to that. Essentially, there are two statements that were authored by the American Association of University Professors. One was the one that was formulated in 1915, and the second was formulated in 1940. However, what you're referring to is the freedom, academic freedom statement that specifies specifically issues involving essentially the role of academic freedom in the classroom and publication. The interpretation of academic freedom has been expanded to both intramural utterances and extramural. So this portion of the statement in white is the 1940 statement. It's no longer 1940. The extramural or the intramural utterances would allow members of the university community to speak on issues impacting the university as they see fit. Extramural utterances are those that are essentially external to the university. It may involve comments involving the university. recent court cases have been restricting the ability of individuals to speak on both intramural and extramural utterances. There are more attacks on the ability to speak on issues today than I can recall, certainly in my career. And so these particular amendments incorporate both intramural and extramural utterances. And it is supported by the AUP, which is, again, the author of this particular document that's in the white portion. That's the original 1940 statement. In fact, the AUP is calling on colleges and universities to offer protection on both intramural and extramural utterances. And so I think this is a clarification of what at least faculty, in some cases staff, can do on specific issues involving those that are outlined in red.
Any further discussion?
Well, I feel that even though I realize this has been sent out to the university campus for their feedback, if we're going to be changing the statement on academic freedom, I think that ought to be more widely discussed campus-wide and how that should be done. I would state that very few faculty on the campus realize we're changing that statement.
Any other discussion? Roll call, please.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
No.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Mr. Wilbur?
Yes.
Mr. Yost?
Yes.
Mr. O'Rourke?
Yes. The next action item is naming of university property. Provost Lord, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. This item is an action item regarding the naming of university property, which is being presented by me on behalf of the president. The opportunity for this naming has come in accordance with the board regulations and consistent with our internal governing policies. And the request is specifically to name the patient waiting area in the University Health Services Building the Heath reception area. By way of background, Dr. Jerry Heath, for whom this naming is taking place, served, and I'm sure many of you know, served as the director of the University Health Service from 1956 to 1988. During the time of his service, the health center changed significantly in terms of the scope of services and the kinds of services available. During that time, the first clinical psychologist was employed, and that was prior to having our counseling center. Student health insurance program was established. X-ray department laboratory was established. A pharmacy was established, all within our health services area. Dr. Heath also served as a university physician for the football and basketball teams during this same time period. And I would also note that Dr. Heath and his wife, Marjorie, who I believe was a former homecoming queen here at EIU many years ago, had been very supportive of the university with their philanthropic gifts as well. Athletics, Human Services Center, Department of Kinesiology and Sports Studies, and the Eastern Symphony Orchestra have all benefited from their generosity. So I present this naming opportunity for the Heath reception area to be named after Dr. Jerry Heath.
Chairman, I'd like to make that motion with respect.
Second.
Second.
Discussion.
I'd like to say just a few words. I never realized until I read this information on here that Dr. Heath and I came here at the same time. I, as a student, and he as the doctor. What bothers me probably is that he doesn't look any different, and I'm still growing. But for 4 years, and with a lot of respect for him, he kept me together for 4 years of playing, you know, every game, and I really appreciate that, not only for his medical expertise, but also for his friendship and his availability to us at all times whenever we needed him. And That's why, with a lot of respect, I made that motion for Dr. Heath. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Roll call, please.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welsh?
Yes.
Mr. Wilbur?
Yes.
Mr. Yost?
Yes.
Mr. O'Rourke?
Yes. Our next item is honorary degrees. Provost Lord again, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, on behalf of the President, I have the honor to present three individuals for consideration for the awarding of honorary degrees. It's unfortunate that Dr. Nielsen is no longer here to do this. She was far more practiced at presenting honorary degree nominees. Would you like these presented all as one or individually for vote?
I think it's one would be
as
fine.
As one. Okay, let me go through all three of them then. The first individual is F.E. Joseph Glassford. Joseph Glassford is a significant figure in the state of Illinois in the area of special education programs. He has been dedicated his life of over 40 years, his career of over 40 years, to understanding, defining, shaping, and influencing special education policy in the state. He's received both the first Larry D. Vellemont Leadership Award and the Dave Berto Award from the Illinois Administrators of Special Education, and he also served as the first State Director of Special Education for Illinois. In addition to being a proud alum of Eastern's with both a bachelor's degree and a master's degree awarded from Eastern, he has served for a short period of time as an adjunct instructor in special education. And following his retirement from Wabash and Ohio Valley Special Education District, he served as a student teaching coordinator for 10 years with Eastern. So he is the first presentee for an honorary degree. The second individual is Dr. H. Ray Hoops. Dr. Hoops has experienced a successful career both as a higher education administrator and as a professor of some distinction. He is a 1962 graduate of Eastern with a degree in speech communications with an emphasis in speech correction. Following his graduation as with his bachelor's degree from Eastern, he entered graduate school at Purdue, where he earned both a master's and doctorate degrees in audiology and speech sciences, and subsequently went on to a distinguished career both as a teacher and researcher in the areas of rehabilitating post-surgical patients with laryngeal cancer and the analysis of language in patients with brain injuries. More recently, he's had a distinguished career in higher education administration, serving for a number of years until his recent retirement as president of the University of Southern Indiana. As an aside, I will mention that I had the opportunity to serve with Dr. Hoops as a member of a North Central Association visiting team to one of the Wisconsin universities and had a chance to get to know him there. He's a great individual. The last candidate for this honorary degree is Dr. Janet Treischel. Dr. Treischel has been an advocate on behalf of vocational education teachers nationally and internationally through her position as Executive Director of the National Business Education Association. I think it's fair to say that Dr. Treischel has roots that go back to Eastern more than the typical honorary degree candidate. Her father, Don Metcalf, was chief engineer at our physical plant for many years. Her grandmother was a housekeeper in Pemberton Hall, and she attended the EIU Lab School as a child, long before she attended as a college student. She subsequently earned two degrees at Eastern and taught with us for a time as well. She has, in more recent years, been a recipient of a number of distinguished alumnus awards. 1993, the School of Business honored her with such an award, and in 1996, the EIU Alumni Association also recognized her with a Distinguished Alumnus Award. Presenting her for an honorary degree, I suppose, completes the cycle for her from almost cradle to the present. With that, I present these three candidates for honorary degrees.
Chair will entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion. Hearing no discussion, we'll have roll call, please.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welsh?
Yes.
Mr. Wilbur?
Yes.
Mr. Yost?
Yes.
Mr. O'Rourke?
Yes. Our next item is personnel contracts. Provost Lord, please, again.
Thank you again. This item pertains to two personnel contracts. The Board of Trustee policy permits, with authorization from the Board, the President, to award contracts of more than 1 year. And this item is requesting permission for him to make such offers in two instances. I will present the first one and ask Vice President Nadler to present the second. The first request for a opportunity to offer a multi-year contract is for our new Vice President for University Advancement, Mr. Robert Martin. As you all know, he has been hired to replace the retired Dr. Jill Nelson, who left at the beginning or at the end of December. Mr. Martin will be joining us February 1st. And the President is asking for authorization to offer him a contract of 3 years. Currently, he has a 1-year contract. The second personnel contract item is a contract extension. And again, I will ask Vice President Nadler to briefly present that one.
Thank you, Provost Lord. We are seeking approval from the Board today for President Perry to extend a 2-year contract extension to Coach Miller. Coach Miller is with us this afternoon. He started his employment here at EIU in late spring 2005 as the head coach for the men's basketball team. We are very pleased with the progress that is being made in the men's basketball program. Certainly, they are becoming increasingly competitive on the basketball court. There certainly has been more excitement about the program, and that's translated into a lot more noise in Lance Arena, as well as more people in the seats. But there's more than just being competitive on the court. We're also proud of the quality of individuals Coach Miller and his staff are bringing in for these students to serve as student athletes with our sport program. They're doing well academically, they are good gentlemen, they are kind-hearted, and they are making a difference in our community. We are very pleased and proud with that. We are also very pleased with Coach Miller's leadership and the way in which he's building this program. He is involved in the community, he's making a difference on our campus, and when he's out in the community, certainly, he is carrying the banner of Eastern Illinois University. He's a great champion for our causes, and again, due to his leadership and the direction in which the entire program is moving, we are seeking permission from the Board to extend the contract by 2 years. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll first take a motion regarding Mr. Martin's contract.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion?
If I may.
Please.
I was the student member on the search committee that brought Mr. Martin to campus, and from the very beginning, his resume stood out amongst most of the other candidates. And I think that we have made a very good decision to replace Dr. Nelson in the position. I had the pleasure of working with her as my administrative counterpart in my student government position, and I look forward to working with Mr. Martin in the future.
Any other discussion?
I'm sure there's no coach in the nation that would not like more W's. But in what I've heard and what I've read and so on, I am impressed with the total picture here with Coach Miller, and I would approve that.
I have a question for Dr. Lord. You may not be able to answer this, but with the resignation of Jill Nelson, it was my understanding some of her functions will be reassigned. When might we know how those reassignments are, who they go to, and when and how? When?
I believe I can answer that. At an earlier board meeting, the President did seek your comment on his suggested reconfiguration of the Vice President's position. Currently or previously positioned Vice President for External Relation, now to be named Vice President for University Advancement. There were two specific changes. One, Dr. Nelson had responsibility for the Office of Planning and Institutional Studies, sometimes known as Institutional Research. That was proposed and has now been moved to to the Vice President for Business Affairs, and Dr. Weber is in the process of seeking a director of it, Budget and Office of Planning and Institutional Studies, so that those units have come together, and he might wish to make some comment on that. The other change that the President sought was to change the reporting line for our radio and TV station, WEIU. And he gave me a memo the other day that announced that I was responsible as of December 1st. So I'm now the supervisor for WEIU and trying desperately to learn what goes on in a broadcasting operation.
Congratulations.
Dr. Weber, do you have anything you'd like to add on the OPUS reassignment?
Sure. I'll briefly comment. And again, the board was consulted on these matters earlier. Under my area was already the Office for Budget. And then President Perry moved the Office for Planning and Institutional Studies to my area as well. And in my mind, those three areas are very tightly connected. Planning informs our budget. We have to do institutional research and reports based on what we've done with our budget, and the results of those help inform our future planning. And so I decided that it was both appropriate and necessary to bring those two offices together into a single office of planning, budget, and institutional research. It was also a move that was driven partly by our fiscal circumstances. In both offices, budget office and planning and institutional studies, I had vacant director positions. And so I've eliminated one position and by merging those two together. We are in the process of doing a search for that director. I'm pleased to say we have a very healthy pool of applicants for that, and the search committee is in the process of reviewing those applicants.
Dr. Ward, Mr. Morton is not here, right? He's not here at present.
Correct.
Okay. Is that fairly normal for a person, this is a pretty high position, to not show up when he's hired? Or is that, I don't know what our past history has been immediate for people. Were you here when you were hired?
Yes, I was.
You were, okay. So, what? See, I remember.
The time in which any administrator hired by the university can start often depends on their ability to extricate themselves from their current positions. If you may remember, Dr. Nielsen announced her intention to retire, not late, but without a lot of lead time. That was done last summer, and I was given the rich administrative opportunity of chairing that search on a very tight time frame. Typically, academic searches take more than 6 months to successfully conclude. I pushed the committee pretty hard, and Mr. Wilbur may want to comment on that. Julie Nimmons was also a member of that committee. We went as fast as we possibly could, but we did not have the search concluded with recommendations to the president until basically the second week of December. And when he entered into conversations with Mr. Martin, Mr. Martin said he would not be able to conclude his duties at Auburn until February 1st, and the president agreed that that would be when he started then.
Any further discussion on the Martin contract? Roll call, please.
Mr. Cronaville?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Mr. Wilbur?
Yes.
Mr. Yost?
Yes.
Mr. O'Rourke?
Yes. Now we'll entertain a motion for the contract for Coach Miller.
So move. Second.
Any discussion?
Well, I'd just like to make a comment. I attend a lot of the athletic events. And I think that Mike Miller is a person of class. He's got high moral standards. He's a good role model. The type of recruits that we've been receiving the last few years are of high standard. There's a particular emphasis on academics. Those are important. And as I recall, the academic output in the basketball area is very, very good. And he has a good staff, and I see us making progress. And I think that he is a very good coach, and I support the recommendation.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, we'll have roll call, please.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Mr. Wilbur?
Yes.
Mr. Yost?
Yes.
Mr. O'Rourke?
Yes. Our next action item is labor agreement. Mr. Miller, please.
A proposed labor agreement between AFSCME Local 981, the clerical portion of that unit, and the university is being submitted for board approval. This is a proposed three-year agreement that begins retroactively to July 1, 2009 and would conclude on June 30th, 2012. It is recommended that the board approve this successor agreement and wages.
Chair will entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Discussion. Hearing no discussion, we'll have roll call, please.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Mr. Wilbur?
Yes.
Mr. Yost?
Yes.
Mr. O'Rourke?
Yes. Our next item is amendment to faculty senate's constitution. Provost Lord, please.
Again, thank you. This is a relatively straightforward request from the faculty senate. The faculty senate has a constitution. Their constitution can be amended. The current language in the constitution provides that amendments must be circulated in hard copy paper version before they can be then taken for an election. Last fall, they held a special election for other purposes, and they included on the ballot question an amendment to their constitution that would allow them in the future to circulate proposed changes to the constitution, amendments to the constitution, electronically, the way they circulate all other communications from the Senate these days. It's basically a request to bring the constitution into the 21st century. I present that on behalf of the Faculty Senate. Dr. Pommier just walked in. He may or may not want to say anything about this. I'm sure he's going to have a voice from the constituencies in a little bit. John, do you feel compelled to say anything, or is it pretty straightforward? Okay.
Chair, entertain a motion.
I'll so move.
I'll second.
Any discussion?
I just had a question. Just for information purposes, is there an acknowledgement of the emails that it sent out? You know, someone might say, well, I didn't get it or whatever, and so on and so forth. Just a question. I'm fine with it. I just, that run through my mind.
Any other discussion? Roll call, please.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Mr. Wilbur?
Yes.
Mr. Yost?
Yes.
Mr. O'Rourke?
Yes. Next, we'll go to information items. The President's report.
Today, under the President's report, we're going to have a presentation from Barbara Burke, our athletic director. Before turning the microphone over to Barbara, I do want to note that we have a somewhat larger audience than usual today. I know it's scintillating business we always do here, but it is still a very sizably larger audience. I want to note for the board members that former President Lou Hankins' graduate class members and Vice President Nadler's graduate class members are in attendance, and I'm sure they are deeply impressed with the scintillating work that the board does. Barbara, with that as a segue.
How you
Thank you for allowing me to come before you today and to present very exciting information following up on that. As you may or may not be aware, the Intercollegiate Athletic Department is currently undergoing an NC2A athletics recertification process. It is a 10-year process, so it happens once every 10 years, and it's very intense, actually. And I'll try to go through this very quickly. You've had this information in your packet, and then I'll afford opportunities for questions at the end. And before I actually get started, I really want to thank Dr. Dr. Jill Owen. She serves as the chair of the steering committee, and I really appreciate her leadership through this process. The purpose of certification is really to ensure that the athletic department is performing with integrity. Very simply put, that's what the NC2A is looking for. It allows us to open up the affairs of the department, allows us to set standards for the department, but also to establish sanctions for anything that we might find through the self-study or the comprehensive report. The benefits of the self-certification, and this is what we're really striving for at the end, to help ourselves find out what are we not doing, what can we do better, are there ideas out there that we can take from other programs. So it's a self-awareness. It's an affirmation of what we are doing, and it provides us many opportunities to improve our program. The process, as you might imagine, is very long and drawn out. It's a two-year process from start to finish. We actually began this fall or in August of 2009 with the video conference. There's three dates that I have focused my attention on. And number one is the deadline for the development of the self-study. It's due by April 30th of 2010, which we're currently in that process. There's three subcommittees, and I'm going to talk about those very quickly. All of their reports are due here on the 8th of February, so we are right on schedule with what we need to do. The second big date comes in 2010 of October 6th to 8th, and that's when the NC2A peer review team will be on campus to interview and do walkthroughs of our facilities and things of that nature. And then the final date that we're all looking forward to and we'll celebrate when it's done is in February of 2011, and that's when a final certification decision will be rendered by the committee. There's three operating principles that we are required to report on: governance and commitment to rules compliance, academic integrity, gender diversity, and student-athlete well-being. Governance and commitment, which is chaired by Mr. Rob Miller, is really a policy and procedure-driven document. Basically, there's two operating principles: institutional control and rules compliance. Let me give you, instead of reading that, I'll give you what might be a sample question out of this section. We would have to describe how the president maintains a clear and direct oversight of the athletics program, including a description of the reporting lines from the athletics director to the president. That's an example of one question that the committee would be working on under governance and commitment to rules compliance. The second operating principle is academic integrity. And basically, there's two principles: academic standards and academic support. Under academic standards, they're searching to make sure our student athletes are treated consistently with the student body population. Under support, they want to ensure that our student athletes have a proper emphasis on the academic setting and educational environment within the athletic program. Dr. Gail Richard is the chair of the Academic Integrity Committee. This section is very heavy data-driven analysis, if you will. For example, they will be comparing the federal graduation rates of our scholarship student athletes to the federal graduation rates of the student body population. The last section is gender diversity and student athlete well-being. There's three operating principles that deal with gender issues, diversity issues, and student-athlete well-being. Cynthia Nichols is the chair of this subcommittee, and it is very research-driven. As you can see, under gender, it's our responsibility to promote an athletics department that is free from gender bias. Diversity, to make sure that we treat our student-athletes with sensitivity and dignity. And then finally, student-athlete well-being, that we promote and enhance the physical and mental well-being of our students. A sample question coming out of this section might be to describe how matters concerning diversity and gender issues are monitored, evaluated, and addressed on a continuing basis. What we're searching for at the end, and what is the outcome that we're after? Well, we want to hear one word at the end, and it's called certified. If the NC2A comes back and renders a decision of certification, we are done in February, and we move forward. There's two others: certification with conditions, which means we have a little more work to do, and then not certified, which means we have a lot more work to do. And we will not accept anything less but certified. Just to give you a sample of what the peer review team will be doing when they're on campus, there will be required interviews, and I've listed those for your review. There are also some potential interviews that might take place. It's possible they would interview members of the Board of Trustees. And finally, if you want to have more reading, there's quite a bit out there, actually. We have two sites that you can access, one the institutional website and one the athletic department website. Both of those sites have links to the NC2A site, which gives all the detail, the instruments, the handbooks, any of the documents that you might care to review and review. Are there any questions from the board concerning NC2A recertification?
The study seems very well organized. Have you been through one of these before?
Two other times, yes.
Several times.
Yes. I said I would never take a job again if they were doing this. And it's okay. Hopefully this might be it for me.
Very good.
Well, we appreciate the effort.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Burke. Appreciate it.
Well, that concludes my report.
Next is a report from the chair, and as many of you know and have seen and heard, the fiscal crisis that's across the world and our nation and locally has been the topic of endless discussion and news, and we talk about it a lot. We talked about the budget woes, and I just wanted to say something in opposition to that in general. But first, I want to commend the administration and the staff, the faculty and the students, for their collaborative effort to address the budget shortfall that presently confronts us. I applaud those efforts and appreciate them. I think all the board does. Every possible cut, deferral, and sacrifice has been reviewed and considered. The strategies that have been formulated will serve EIU well. All institutions across all aspects of society are facing these items, from manufacturing to entrepreneurs to education, government. It's every part of our society. It's not an easy time. But I believe EIU will continue to be an excellent institution because of its people, you people. It's my belief that these woes are waning. Since 2007, the consensus of the economic establishment, and that's our bankers, and CEOs, and stock analysts, I think have gotten it wrong. They missed the economic storm that was coming. When the clouds were gathering, and when the rain began to fall, they didn't see the deluge. And as a result, throughout 2008, executives, investors, and consumers like ourselves, we chased the economy down, I believe, cutting back when things got worse, then cutting back again when the roof fell in. These same people are also missing, I think, the recovery. Blind optimism is definitely wrong, but so is blind pessimism. We shouldn't ignore the parallel narrative that's going along in this country today, that there's a parallel narrative of recovery. And I think that recovery is going to come, and it's a reality for all of us. We should continue to tighten our belts, but be psychologically prepared and optimistic for that strong economic recovery. Those are personal opinions, not opinions of the board. But I believe it's time to be optimistic, not pessimistic. And that's my report. I get to keep talking. Fortunately for all of you, the Executive Planning Committee, we had a very good meeting. We covered a lot of topics. I'll just highlight the topics. We talked about the 2010 Association of Governing Boards meeting. We had a budget update, which is all that gloom and doom that I just dispelled, I hope. We talked about the proposed amendment to EIU's Management Act, which would include some short-term borrowing if necessary to keep this institution alive. We talked about the NCAA recertification, the campus master plan, the regional biomass initiative, and unfortunately the furlough policy. We also had short discussions on some Ethics Act changes and a legislative update. The Board Relations Committee did not meet, is that correct? That's correct. Finance and Audit Committee?
Chairman O'Rourke, everything that we discussed has been covered here at the board meeting.
Thank you. Academic Student Affairs.
Thank you. The agenda items included the proposed housing rates, which you just approved. And based on Dr. Nadler's report on the relative cost of housing compared to other public universities, this would seem to fit into the Illinois Board of Higher Education's public agenda on affordability. And so I would certainly let the BHE know that we're doing what we can to keep costs as low as feasible. Dr. Lord went over the budget issues, constraints, implications, and I was pleased to hear that based on the direction and support of the administration, there will be every attempt to minimize the impact on the academic mission of the institution. Obviously, there will be cost constraints, but there will be every attempt to make those as minimal as possible. I think that's quite important. Also, there will be attempts to fill positions that have been vacated to facilitate the instructional mission. It's also, I think, quite important. Under the enrollment report, it appears that there is no significant difference in the expectations of enrollment in the spring semester compared to previous semesters, so we're holding our own in that regard, and that's also important. Interestingly enough, the applications for admissions are up, and if I have the figure correct, approximately 23%.
That's for the transfer students.
Transfer student applications up 20, okay. And then minority applications are significantly up in all categories, with in specific citation, again, if I get this number correct, among African Americans, a total of 595 applications.
Actually, that was Hispanics that were 595.
Okay, all right. And so that remains to be seen how many will actually enroll, but definitely a significant change over time. So it appears we're doing as best we can under budgetary restraints that are currently existing. Thank you.
And did you have anything for board regulations?
The only thing would, I think what we did today was important, and I thank those board members and the board for support.
Next is reports from constituencies from the Faculty Senate. Mr. Pommier.
Hello, the Board of Trustees. I don't have much to report. I just wanted to basically be here today just to stand if there was any kind of questions with reference to the approval of this Article 11, Section 1A, and I thank you for that consideration. And also just to provide my gratitude, which I've had some communications with Trustees Welch and Webb in regards to BGP that's been discussed and will be discussed, I think. I don't know if it's been concluded yet today. And then to also offer an opportunity again for members of the Board of Trustees to come speak with the Faculty Senate. After speaking with the Faculty Senate, they are very, very welcome in that idea. And I just want to throw, if I could, to Nate Setcha, the 23rd of March, which is in reference to, we do have elections going on at that given time, and I think that would fit nicely with that. And then also if April 6th, we work out, because that's basically the time which we're trying to do a connections type of a meeting, a session. So again, I just want to thank you for what you've done, and I'd love to invite you to come attend to work with the Faculty Senate.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, from student government, Marco Ledsky. Did I pronounce that correctly, I hope?
Okay. Thank you very much for having me here today. My name is Mark Olensky. I'm the Student Vice President for Student Affairs. Just here to give a very brief report on behalf of the student government and the student body as a whole. So this semester, we amended our student body constitution. That was a process that I was deeply involved in. We submitted it for student referendum during our past election, and it passed overwhelmingly. Mr. Wilbur will be talking a little bit more about that during his report. We also had very successful elections in conjunction with the constitutional referendum. We had a record voter turnout, and I'm very excited about it. I think our organization was rejuvenated with a lot of fresh faces, a lot of fresh ideas, and I think it will benefit the student body and the university as a whole. The student body president asked me to mention that multiple student groups here on campus are organizing donation drives and other programs aimed at supporting relief efforts for Haiti. This next week at our student government meeting, we will be debating the upcoming tax swap referendum that's going to be on the February 2nd ballot. I've authored legislation in the form of a resolution to present our organization with the chance to render an opinion on the matter on behalf of the student body. That will be at our meeting on Wednesday, January 27th. We're also going to be placing a renewed emphasis on community service. As has been mentioned, these are very tough economic times, and I know that not just the university, but our surrounding community is suffering. So we are going to place a renewed emphasis on getting out and being citizens of our local community. Lastly, the student government is making it an absolute priority to reassure our constituents of the continued vitality and viability of this university, despite the economic times we're facing. Further, we are utterly committed to doing everything in our power to improve not just the student body, not just the university, but the community as a whole. And with that, I thank you. Are there any questions?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next information item is report on student body constitution revisions. Mr. Wilbur.
Thank you. I'm passing around a copy of the constitution that we amended and a summary of the major changes that we made to it. The last time the student body constitution was amended was in 2004, and since then we've seen several different areas that could be improved. And so back in the fall of 2008, we formed a committee that would be looking at the constitution, which was known as the Committee on Constitutional Oversight, lovingly known as COCO. And basically what we did was we went through the constitution line by line and saw what needed to be improved and tried to improve it in any way we could. Unfortunately, we could not get a draft for the spring, but we continued the process last fall. And Mr. Olensky chaired COCO, and I was the vice chair for that organization. And we came with all of these recommendations. We went through the entire constitution. As you'll see, there are several different changes to it. We presented it to the full student senate in November, and it passed unanimously and was placed on the ballot for our December 7th and 8th elections. And at that time, it was approved by the student body by a 557 to 111 vote. It needed 66%, and I believe that comes to about 83% of the students voting in the election approved it. Moving to the major changes that were made, the biggest change was we eliminated Senate districts. Whereas before we had three different districts for senators, senators that lived on campus, senators that lived off campus, and senators that were at large. They could live in either. And unfortunately, we discovered over a period of several years that there were a lot more students on campus that were interested in student government than were off campus. That could be for a number of reasons. Most of the time, off-campus students are older and are already involved in a lot of different other organizations, and so they didn't want to get involved in student government. Or some of the issues that we were talking about really didn't affect them, so they really didn't want to get involved there. And unfortunately, with our last election, every senator that ran in the off-campus district was elected, and there were still two seats left over. So that's why we changed that. We also wanted to place a renewed emphasis on academics. In front of every single one of our titles is the word student. We are students first here at this university. And so we increased the GPA to be a student senator slightly from 2.25 to 2.30 with the hope of possibly raising it again in the future. We increased the GPA to be an executive officer from 2.25 to 2.5.
and the same to be a student Supreme Court justice. We also shortened the length of the term from the student Supreme Court justices from two years to two semesters. A lot of students can't really tell what they'll be doing in 2 years, and of the seven members that Levi had appointed last year, there are only two that would actually fill out the full two-year term. So we decided that we needed to amend that down. And then you'll see that there are several other changes that we made as well. And we also just kind of cleaned up a lot of the language. And there are several examples in the Constitution where there were just small typos that made it, I guess, seem a little unprofessional. My favorite was Mr. Ken Baker as the advisor to the student Supreme Court was termed as an exotic member of the court. We almost left that in there, just for hilarity's sake, but we decided to make him an ex officio member. And we also added in a provision that would allow us to do those clerical revisions without having to go through the full amendment process. So, as you can see on the front page, President Perry approved it, and I'm presenting this to the board under board regulations. So, that's all that I had. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilbur. Anybody have any questions or comments?
Eric, I didn't have a chance to find this, but maybe you can clarify for me. The Illinois Board of Higher Education has a student advisory committee.
Yes.
What mechanism is used to place a student on that committee from Eastern?
It's on page...
Okay,
seven.
So it is in this class.
Yes.
Okay.
That's under my office as the student executive vice president. I am the voting member, and I appoint an alternate voting member as well.
Okay. Is there a continuous appointment from Eastern on that advisory committee? Do you have a seat, or is it rotated?
We have a permanent seat.
You have a permanent seat. Okay.
Along with each other of the public institutions.
Yes, Mr. Yost.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to make a point of appreciation to Eric, who represents the students at this great university. I continue to be amazed every month at the level of activity and leadership that this young man has exhibited. And, I mean, it's just always right in there providing leadership, and I just want to say, as one, I appreciate it so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilbur. Our next item is the 2010 Deposit Investment Report. Vice President Weber, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. The board has before it the Deposit and Investment Report on pages 24 and 25. There's really very little change since the last Deposit and Investment Report that you received. We're certainly pleased to see the continued positive numbers as opposed to some of the negative ones we saw in the last year and a half. And in particular, it's good to see some improvement in the equities. Treasurer McCann is here in the audience to assist with any questions that you may have.
Any questions or comments from the board? Thank you. Then we'll move on to a summary of purchases. Again, Mr. Vice President Weber.
Yes, thank you. For purchases between $100,000 and $249,999, we only have one such purchase to report for this meeting, and that was the purchase of two grand pianos for the Doudna Fine Arts Center. The information is summarized on page 26.
Any questions or comments there?
Jesus.
Next, we will have the Financial Aid Programs Report from Vice President Nadler.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your board packet on page 27 is the annual summary for the Financial Aid Programs Report. Just wanted to highlight how hard the Financial Aid Office is working, always looking for additional ways in which to serve our students, serve them very efficiently, serve them very effectively. We're very pleased with how the Financial Aid Office is able to do that.
And we also have our Director of Financial Aid here, Jerry Dona, in case there's any specific questions the board may have. Thank you.
Any questions of Mr. Knapp? Thank you. And next we have University Highlights. Provost Lord.
Again, this is an information report compiling various highlights for you. I commend it to your reading. It's always risky to pull one highlight out of a list of many highlights or one or two highlights. I will note under the students' spotlight there the continued strong performance of Eastern students on the CPA exams. They continue to outperform students from other state of Illinois institutions. And I will note Professor Sean Peebles' recognition with the 2009 Henry Dreyfus Teacher Scholar Award. That's a very prestigious award, and we're very pleased and wish to congratulate him. I hope you take time to read all of the highlights listed here. They should make you very proud of what's going on at Eastern.
Any comments on the highlights? Any other items that come before the board?
Motion.
None, we stand adjourned.
Adjourned.
Thank you.